My guest at this time is Carrie Severino. She is Chief Counsel and Policy Director at the Judicial Crisis Network. She is also a former law clerk for Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas. With her work with the Judicial Crisis Network, she was very active in the confirmation effort, the successful confirmation effort, I might add, for now Justice Neil Gorsuch. But the fight over judicial nominations is not just limited to the high court. There are a lot of vacancies still out there, 19 to be specific, on the circuit court level and more than 100 on the district court level. And the Trump administration a little bit behind the eight ball in getting names out there, but it looks like they're starting to move in that direction. And Carrie, thanks very much for being with us.
Great to be here, and it's an exciting time.
It certainly is, and this push, it seems, from Trump comes at a time when we've seen his administration set back by district court judges and, in some cases, circuit court judges. Most recently, the suggestion from a district court judge out in California that locales do not have to abide by federal immigration law, yet they still get the money from the federal government, so that fight goes on. Obviously, a lot of focus in the campaign on the Supreme Court fight and the vacant seat that existed, and that makes a lot of sense. But how important are these lower court fights, too?
Oh, they're incredibly important. I mean, all of these are lifetime seats on the federal courts. And remember, the Supreme Court takes less than 1% of the cases appealed to it every year. That means well upwards of 99% of cases are decided at the lower courts, because many of those district court cases don't even get all the way up to the appellate courts. They might end there. So it's a huge, huge impact on American law. And as you've pointed out, there's a lot of mischief that can be worked by district court judges as well, if it's someone who's perhaps putting politics ahead of simply assessing the legal merits of a case. And so we need to have all these seats really well filled with people who are going to be principled and highly qualified. You know, people in the mold of now Justice Neil Gorsuch. So I'm excited to have the same team that came up with his nomination working on these other ones as well.
And I guess that's one of the vacancies now on the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals.
Exactly.
where Gorsuch came from. So, Carrie, when it comes to the approach here, we saw the president with a list during the campaign of who he would choose from for the vacant seat on the Supreme Court. Do you expect the same type of approach, not from that list, obviously, but from the same type of criteria that we see from the Federalist Society, the Heritage Foundation, and so forth, or do you expect something else?
Well, you know, this has been one of the signature accomplishments of his first 100 days in office. I can't imagine why the president would want to diverge from an incredibly successful strategy so far. And, you know, frankly, some of the people on that list could be candidates. We already know that Judge Amul Thapar, who is a district court judge in Kentucky, now has been nominated to the Sixth Circuit. That's the first nominee that actually has been out for several weeks. He just had his confirmation hearings. But there's other state court judges on this list. So there are some of the people on that list that could be candidates for these appellate court positions and some of these district court positions. But I think also you're going to see the same principles going into it. You want someone who is going to be faithful to the text of the law, faithful to the text, the original understanding of the Constitution, putting the law before one's political instinct on where they want the case to come out. We want people who are going to be judges first. And I think that's what we got with Gorsuch. I think it's going to be the same type of vetting process to find these seats as well.
Democrats, of course, nuked the filibuster when it came to the lower court judges. Is there any way that with them in the minority, they can still delay things or throw up roadblocks? What power do they have right now?
Well, they certainly, I mean, look at the cabinet. We barely just got our cabinet confirmed, and there was no filibuster on those positions either. They have become masters of gridlock, of delay, so certainly they'll try that. However, of course, they cannot filibuster anyone. There also is the blue slip policy, which means that that senators from a state can potentially block these nominees. So if you've got a state with two Democratic senators, it may be difficult to come to an agreement between Trump's administration and those senators as to the kind of person who should fill that seat. So some of those are going to be probably take a little bit more time to fill. That said, I know that the administration is taking this very seriously. As you said, the Supreme Court was a major issue in the campaign. Judges are one of the big things that got Donald Trump elected, and his team recognizes that this is a huge priority. He called it one of the most important things a president does. So they're going to be moving forward. We had a lot of delay with just because the Senate's been moving so slowly, and you know, you had to get Justice Gorsuch confirmed. It's unusual to have to do that right out of the gate for a presidency. But I know they're ready with the next tranche of judges, hopefully very soon.
And Carrie, I'm imagining that you worked in collaboration to some extent with the Trump team in getting Judge Gorsuch confirmed. So how well do they know the deeper bench? We saw the short bench for the Supreme Court. When it comes down to these over 100 district court levels, do they have a pretty good feel on who good picks are for that? Or is this going to be a matter of competing advisors and which one the president ultimately listens to?
Well, it's always a little harder to find and identify those people when you're looking at the Supreme Court nominees. You're pretty much looking at judges, federal judges mostly, but state Supreme Court judges. It's a smaller list you're picking from. So you do have to really tap a lot of resources. The good news is that there's a very strong conservative legal movement. The White House has a lot of connections with different people in those areas and has been doing a great job of reaching out and finding out who are the leading lawyers, you know, in all of these different states that might be excellent picks for, say, the district court positions, or who are the up-and-coming either state judges or other appellate advocates or district judges who are going to be the right ones for these appellate things. So you do have to tap a much wider network. But one thing that was exciting for me on this topic, you know, candidate Trump always said, I'm going to ask the smartest people and, you know, get all the experts. And when it came to judges, boy, he really did. He didn't come up with that list for the Supreme Court by himself. He knew the right people to ask, and I think they know the right people to ask for these spots as well.
Carrie, you mentioned that these are lifetime appointments, so Trump can't fire them like he could the U.S. attorneys or so forth. They need to resign or retire or do something. So in the last 24 years, we've had 16 years of Democratic presidents and 8 years of Republican presidents. So when you look at the landscape of the federal judiciary right now, which way does it lean? How far to the left is it, given the fact that 2/3 of the last 24 years have had Democratic presidents?
Yeah, and when you look at it, normally a two-term president can turn over about 2/3 of the judiciary. Barack Obama certainly did that. When he came into office, one out of the 13 courts of appeals had a democratically nominated majority of judges. When he left, nine of the 13 did. So we went from a pretty significant shift when you look at how, and as I said, most of the cases that are decided, 99%, end at those courts. So there is a definite tilt at this point. However, you know, the good news is every president, a two-term president generally gets to replace 2/3 of the judges. And currently our president is Donald Trump, and it looks like he's going to make some great picks for those slots. So he may even have more front-loaded opportunities than most presidents do, because this does seem like a very large number of vacancies, and there are a lot more. I think there's upwards of half of the federal judges, the appellate judges, who are either retired or eligible to take senior status. So there could be many more coming. We just don't know how or when that's going to come. He has a real great opportunity to help shape the courts.
Carrie, obviously the criteria you look for in a judge is the same criteria regardless of what's happening in the country around us right now. But when you look at some of the things we're dealing with, whether it's the court's reaction to the president's immigration orders or the attitude towards free speech in some situations, how critical are the nominations coming not only in these 4 years, but shortly down the road as well?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. All of those issues. And the hardest part is you don't know what the next issue is going to be. We couldn't have seen all of these issues coming when the people who are currently on the bench were nominated. That's why it's so important to have a vetting process that doesn't just, you know, say, here's topics. How do you feel about, you know, free speech? How do you feel about immigration? I feel about this, that. We don't need to know what their politics or their policy preferences are on these things. You need to have someone who actually understands the judicial philosophy here, because that's what's going to help them get the next question down the road that we haven't even seen yet correct, and make sure that it's going to still be in line with our constitutional system and the laws that are passed by our elected representatives. So I think that's you know, there's so much at stake that we can't even predict what the next major issue is. We couldn't have seen these issues coming, or, you know, the religious freedom it clashes now with the gender ideology issues. Those are all things no one could have predicted 10 years ago, really, but they're coming to fruition now. We need to make sure we have people with the principles who will be able to answer the next question.
Last question, Carrie. I can't let you get away. There's been a lot of speculation about potentially another Supreme Court vacancy once this session is over towards the end of June. Are you hearing anything definitive on that?
Definitive, no. Lots of rumors, but then we've been hearing rumors for literally a year about that. So you just never know. We do have three Supreme Court justices who are basically into their 80s, and so one would expect that there's going to be at least one more vacancy during President Trump's tenure here, and probably at least during his first term. So I think that's just up to the justices in terms of when they decide to step down. But it's absolutely a possibility, and it's one we're certainly ready for.
Well, it's going to be a busy year. Already has been for you at the Judicial Crisis Network. Carrie, thanks very much for being with us.
Have a great day.
Carrie Severino is Chief Counsel and Policy Director at the Judicial Crisis Network. She's a former law clerk to U.S. Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.